I would like to introduce Dr. Lynn Kaminsky. Dr. Kaminsky holds a PhD in physics from MIT. She works in collaboration with a number of NASA telescope missions, particularly the Fermi Gamma Ray Telescope and the Neil Gerald Swift Observatory, that work in the high-energy light frequencies. Dr. Kaminsky was the former department chair of the Physics and Astronomy Department at Sonoma State University and is the founder and current director of Ed Eon STEM Learning at SSU, where she creates educational programs for high schools and college curriculums, including programs such as L by M, or Learning by Making, and NASA's Neurodiversity Network, or N3. Dr. Lynn Kaminsky, welcome to Cosmic Radio.
Thanks, Elizabeth. It's my pleasure to be here.
So I didn't know that L by M programs that began in 1999 had a pilot study here at Ukiah High School. What is L by M, and how does it help students, particularly ninth grade high school students, gravitate towards STEM curriculum?
Learning by Making is a program for which we have received funding from the U.S. Department of Education for the past 10 years. So the program actually started in the year 2013, when we were one of 16 proposals that were chosen out of over 660 proposals that were submitted. It was an amazing thing that we were able to get this $3 million grant on our very first try of asking the U.S. Department of Education for funding. Previously, all my funding had been coming from NASA education programs, and NASA changed their funding model in 2013, and so my secure source of funding was a little bit threatened, so we decided to look elsewhere for funding to keep all my staff employed. And at Edion, we've now grown to have about 8 permanent staff, but it's a integrated C-STEM ninth grade curriculum, and C-STEM means coding plus STEM, and STEM means science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So we're integrating coding and actually circuit building with a more traditional type of physical science curriculum, where we're teaching a lot of the same standards, but in a very hands-on way, using circuit boards and computer programs and computer software and sensors and all sorts of things the way real scientists do science. Our first partners in the first 5 years of Learning by Making were all Mendocino County high schools. Oh. We started with Fort Bragg, Willits, Round Valley, Ukiah, and Point Arena were our first 5 high school partners. Point Arena and Ukiah and Round Valley stayed in the program until now. Ukiah just dropped out in the past year after many successful years of teaching Learning by Making to pretty much all of the ninth grade students. Point Arena, I'm not sure what's going to happen because they are having a transition in their science teachers. And Round Valley, our longtime teacher became the principal in Covelo, and so she's hired another science teacher, and they're continuing with the program. And that's a tribal school, and so we're really proud of the impact that we've made on that very small and relatively isolated community.
Have there been studies that have shown that taking these classes like L by M increase the number of students continuing their studies in STEM careers?
So a major part of every Department of Education project is to have external evaluation, and they evaluate a lot of different aspects of our program. They evaluate how well we're training the teachers. They evaluate how well the teachers are teaching the class. They evaluate how well the students are learning the material that we've encouraged them to learn, like how to code and how to build circuits and how to design your own science experiments. The one thing we haven't been able to evaluate, though, is what would be called a longitudinal study, where you track the people over many years to see where they end up. Because with a 5-year program and we're teaching ninth graders, we're not really sure what's going to happen to them when they're done with their high school years and when they're going to go to college. But we have heard anecdotal stories from a lot of the teachers about students whose career plans were radically changed as a result of taking L by M. They never thought they could do programming. They never thought they could do anything with electronics. They thought maybe they were not going to have any kind of technical high-paying career. And then they discovered they could do it. And not only that, a lot of the girls discovered they could do it, and it was really fun, things that they didn't really see themselves doing. And a lot of the girls ended up being experts in the classes explaining a lot of the coding to some of the boy students. And so we've had a lot of good, I call anecdata, anecdotal evidence from stories that the teachers have told us about students, especially really low performing students, who then all of a sudden discovered they were good at something, and it just really invigorated their interest in academics and in continuing their education.
What an amazing curriculum.
Okay, so tell me about NASA's Neurodiversity Network, or N3, and why you developed this.
So the N3 program is very near and dear to my heart. It was inspired by work that I did with a particular student who I met when he was 18, and he was transitioning from homeschooling to going to the Santa Rosa Junior College. And his mom brought him in, and he wasn't really talking to many other people at that time. And she said, "This is my brilliant autistic son, and he loves astronomy. Please give him some research to do." So I spoke to him a little bit, and he was very shy at that time. He's since come out of his shell a lot and realized he wasn't really very much different than all the other physics majors and people that I normally deal with in college. So we trained him to use our robotic telescope, which is called GORT and is located at the Pepperwood Preserve in northeastern Santa Rosa, and that telescope was built with NASA money. So we trained him how to use GORT, and he was looking for near-Earth asteroids that might hit the Earth. And then he went off to the JC after that summer and came back the next summer when I had another program called Rising Data, where we were working with underrepresented students at community college level to teach them how to build rockets and experiments to go on the rockets. And then we launched the rockets. And so he came back and got involved in the Rising Data program. And then by the next spring, he was taking a class at Sonoma State as part of the transfer program between the JC and SSU. So, and I happened to actually be teaching a class that semester because one of her faculty had left, and it was in the makerspace. And so he came and took the making class, where we really do make things with 3D printers and the like. And then he transferred to Sonoma State the next year, eventually completed a physics degree, worked on one of our CubeSat projects, and is now in graduate school at UC Irvine doing nanophotonics in physics. And he is blazing the trail for all of the autistic students coming after him. He has gotten a National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellowship, which is a very prestigious award. He was only my second student in 38 years to get one of those. I've subsequently had a third student, so we now have three SSU students that have gotten one of these graduate fellowships in physics. But I'm just so proud of him, and he's doing great. He's passed all of his qualifying exams. He's working on topics for his PhD thesis. So I thought, well, Alex is a fantastic student, but he shouldn't be the only one that gets the advantage of having serious mentoring and the ability to someday work for NASA. And so NASA was looking for educational project ideas that would increase the diversity of the programs that they were offering. And NASA is a very diverse place. They already had special programs for Black people, brown people, Asian Pacific Islanders, Native Hawaiians, Native Alaskans, visually impaired people, hearing impaired people, you name it. NASA had a program for you, but they had never thought about neurodiversity before. And so I was able to write this proposal to NASA that resulted in the N3 program being funded for 5 years, with the goal of concentrating on the transition between high school and college, which is where I started with Alex. And Alex, basically his pattern through my group, set the pattern for a lot of the work that we then did through the N3 program. For example, he started out by learning how to use our telescope. The first year that we went to redesign existing NASA educational resources, we chose to focus on remote astronomy, or astronomy anywhere. How do you do astronomy with a telescope sitting in the comfort of your own home, right? Well, it's a robotic telescope, and you learn how to talk to the robot. And so it was also the first year the program started was 2021, and it was COVID. So from the comfort of your own home worked really well for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's good timing.
The next year's redesign project was to redesign the Rising Data rocketry and payload experiments that were originally for community college students and drop it to the high school level so we could try this out with our high school students. And we also are partners with the New York Hall of Science, which is in Queens, in New York City, and they run a middle school camp for autistic students in the summers. And so they try out everything that we've been trying out on the high school students. They try to drop the level down to middle school and see how well it works. And so we had a whole bunch of high school students launching rockets. And Tony Elkisser, who's the one that connected connected, you and I, is my rocket mentor. He taught me how to build rockets, and he's been teaching my interns how to build rockets and also these middle school kids. I flew them out to New York to help get all their rockets launched, and Tony ran that launch for them.
Yeah, Tony's a great guy. So, yeah, it's important that NASA incorporate programs for neurodiverse people, and neurodiverse meaning just a different way of thinking. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah, the term neurodiversity means that just the differences in the way people think and approach life. People that can be either neurotypical, like I am, and so my approach to life is pretty standard. I don't have any obvious communication problems. I don't have problems looking people in the eye if I'm talking to them face to face. But a lot of people that are on the autism spectrum have trouble with those things. And there are a lot of other kinds of mental situations that are called neurodivergent. So autism is an example. ADHD is an example of a neurodivergent kind of mind. People with Tourette's. Some people have what's called dysgraphia, where they can't really write handwriting. Some people have dyscalculia, where they can't really do math problems. People have dyslexia, where all the letters get scrambled up and you can't read English words in the correct order. They seem upside down or backwards. So there's a lot of kinds of neurodivergence out there. We chose to focus on the autism spectrum 4 and 3 with the emphasis on our interns that we chose for the summer. So besides the curriculum redesign and co-design projects that we do, we have a summer high school internship program that draws applications from all over the country. And NASA gave us extra money. So now we can support 20 interns instead of the 10 that we were originally funded for. And so then I look to see what part of NASA each intern is really focused on. And then I go out and try to find them a mentor that works on that kind of science. And they're remote mentorships. The people are from all over the country. So only if I get really lucky are they in the same geographical area, so they could actually meet each other in person, face to face. Almost everything is done via Zoom, weekly meetings. And then at the very end of the summer, each intern has to present the project that they've done, and it's up to them how to present it. So part of what we do with N3 is offer people a lot of different kinds of choices in how they communicate with us. For example, they could do a PowerPoint talk over Zoom. They could pre-record themselves doing a PowerPoint talk over Zoom so that they can edit it and make sure that they're happy with the way it turned out instead of trying to do it live. They could make a poster and talk to the poster. They could make a poster and just give us the poster and not talk. We've had at least one student so far that was not able to speak with her mouth, although she was an incredibly brilliant student and was taking college classes at the age of 15 and was at the top of her class, but she just doesn't have the ability to have words come out of her mouth. And so she communicates with the keyboard and the letterboard that her mom helps her with. And for this year's intern program, we have at least one other student that will be in a similar situation. So at the end of the summer, we just have them type up what they want someone to say about their work, and then we read it for them.
It's great that our local university, Sonoma State, provides both neurotypical and neurodiverse students a pathway towards science and engineering professions.
Yeah, well, we're really into supporting any kind of communication mechanism that works for people.
That's excellent.
So, and just really being appreciative of the different brains that everybody has and the different strengths that people bring to the work that they're doing, because the interns that we're selecting, since this is a nationally competitive process sponsored by NASA, as you might imagine, we get some amazing, amazing kids that are applying to this program, and we can't accept them all because our time and funding is limited. So then we created another program called the N3 Scholars Program, where people, mostly sophomores in high school that don't have quite enough programming or science background, they get to come to our monthly science meetings and become part of our N3 community, and then apply again the next year to see if they can become an intern. And this year, there were 10 such people that were scholars from last year that we then accepted into the intern program for this year.
That's like a stepping stone. That's great.
Yeah, like a stepping stone. And we offer them the ability to do work on NASA science projects, but just not with a mentor. These are called citizen science projects, or sometimes participatory science projects. But NASA has a whole page of citizen science projects that you can just learn how to do them online, and you can just dive right in and find a community of people that are working on the same project and analyzing different data. And this is a great way to get started with doing things for NASA, if in fact that's your goal in life, is to work for NASA someday.
Hello, Mendocino County. This is Jada Sturgis Travis, a junior at Ukiah High from Ms. Halpin's biology class. I am interested in becoming an audio engineer, and I will be asking Dr. Lynn Kaminsky two questions today. The first question is, what are the potential career pathways one could choose from by taking STEM classes?
Well, I always encourage people to take as much math as they can possibly take, because taking math and taking science classes allows you to always choose the better option when you have to make choices about your life. Most students don't know what to choose, and so I say it's very easy. Pick the hardest thing, because it will be the thing that leads to more choices down the road. The worst thing to have happen is to be stuck in a dead end where there are no choices and you have to do just this one thing because it's all the only thing you know how to do. The more science and math you take and the more coding and electronics you take, or no, the more choices you have for your future, whether to go right to the workforce, whether to go to college and keep studying, whether to go to college and then to a graduate program that they'll pay you for. Those are all choices that are open to people that have taken a lot of science and math. If you stop taking science and math too early and you don't take enough to even be able to go to college, you've basically doomed yourself to a life where you're not going to get paid very much money in most of the careers that are left open to you. And so, you know, we like our students to have choices. We like them to always be able to pick the better choice. And it just so turns out that the better choice is usually the harder choice, which means you will have to do some studying. You will have to learn math. But if you actually do those things, you'll find the rest of your life will be much easier.
Thank you, Dr. Kaminsky. And why do you think there is a gender gap within the STEM workforce?
That's a really good question, Jada. And I've spent a lot of time trying to figure that out myself, because needless to say, at the time when I was in graduate school, I was always one person in a room that was the female with 100 men. In the classes that I took at MIT, there were very few other women. There were two other women, and neither one of them managed to get all the way through. One came back to Stanford and transferred back to a school in California and eventually got her PhD from Stanford. And one of the women was actually from the country of Iran, and this was when the Shah fell, and she had to go back to Iran. So never really quite sure what happened to her educationally, but there were very few women around. And it's still true that in engineering and in physics and in math, the percentage of women that go on for graduate studies and, you know, become professors and, you know, those kind of academic careers is about 15%, 1-5. Whereas now in law school, medical school, biology, chemistry, we're at parity. The classes that are in grad school are half women, at least, in all of these other fields. It just hasn't quite gotten around to physics, math, or engineering. And so what I've concluded from that is that the things that are the closest to hardware jobs, where you're really dealing with equipment and things that break and things you have to fix, those fields that are very experimental, that have a lot of fancy equipment, they tend to still be male-dominated, but also pure math fields like theoretical physics, mathematical theory, those also are dominated by men. I'm not really sure why in that case, but it is encouraging that in the other scientific fields like biology and chemistry and also astronomy, that if you look at the percentages of people in the current generation of grad students, so people in their late 20s to early 30s, they're at parity. They're at least 50% women in all those fields.
Right on.
Another thing I noticed is because I have horses, all the new horse vets are women. In fact, if you look at the UC Davis veterinary, large animal veterinary class, they're almost all women now. And it used to be thought that women couldn't deal with the bigger creatures, and so they would just become small animal vets and not do horses and cows. But the miracles of modern chemistry, you can just sedate the horse and you can work on it. And you don't have to be a big, strong man. And I'm glad that to see these trends continue. But there is still a lot of sexual harassment and gender bias in STEM fields. And so one of my other projects that I'm working on with Professor Matthew Pellucci Callahan at Sonoma State, he's a social psychologist, is we've made some training modules to teach students how to recognize implicit gender bias and also how to respond if they're sexually harassed or they see somebody else being sexually harassed. Because the power dynamics take a long time before you can get rid of them. We see this continually playing out in the news media with famous people from all walks of life still getting in trouble for misbehaving.
I'm glad you're paving the way for women and neurodiverse people everywhere.
Well, I'm certainly doing my best. I'm hopeful that a lot of the things I'm working on are having a real impact that will last on a more permanent basis, but that's what academics always hope, right? We hope to inspire the next generation and have them continue to carry the torch. So certainly working on that.
Thank you again. And remember, Mendocino County, there will be links available on the KZYX website if you want to learn more about Lynn Kaminsky, her programs, and Sonoma State University.
Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Lynn Kaminsky for being a guest on our show and telling us all about the educational programs that you are creating and running.
Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope other people will too when they get to listen to it.
Well, we're at the end of this month's show. Tune in next month to find out what's up in the July night sky and an interview with Dr. Laura Petikoulis. Dr. Petikoulis is an associate director of EdEon STEM Learning at Sonoma State University and the associate director of Sonoma State Physics and Astronomy Department. Dr. Petikoulis will be talking to us about the sun and the effects that our star has on Earth, particularly during this uptick in its solar maximum cycle. So join us, and don't forget to look up and catch all that cosmic beauty. My name is Elizabeth Garcia for Cosmic Radio here on KZYX, Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. Ad Astra.